Okay, so the last session we just talked about finding the candidates, how we go about finding them and interviewing them and making them a formal offer. This session we're going to talk about how do we get them orientated? How do we, once they come in, we hired them and they're going to come in for the first day, what do we do with them when that happens? How many of you, when you start your employee the first day, just kind of put them at their workstation with somebody that is already currently in that area and say, just watch what she does? Any of you do that? Some of you just aren't willing to admit it. Okay, so what we're going to talk about is I want you to understand the importance of formalizing orientation and initial training for all new employees. Learn how this first impression will make a lasting and loyal employee. And learn the necessary steps to transition your new employees into your practice's culture. So, the first day of employment, you need to be prepared. You need to be prepared. So, you don't want to start this new employee on a day that you've got a lot going on in your office, for example, like payroll, or you're going to be out that day on vacation. You do not want to start that new employee. I believe that new employee needs to be with a key leader in your practice for the first 2 days. They don't even go to their work area. They need to be with a key leader. So it needs to be your hospital administrator, your practice manager, someone who really is going to set a strong first impression for this employee. Because I believe that if that employee comes in and they just get passed off to somebody that maybe has only been in that position for a couple of years and you don't have anything really prepared, what's going on in their mind? What are they thinking about this job? They're not that important. So immediately they're thinking, wow, this really isn't that big of a deal. This isn't that, I'm not important to this practice because I'm not getting the, you know, formal attention from a key leader in the practice. Yes? He said who, if it's a small practice and let's say you don't have a practice manager per se, you have a smaller team, who do you put them with? And I would say the practice owner. Because the practice owner is the manager by default and is the key leader in the practice. And I would put at least, I would have them come in maybe late morning so that veterinarian can see patients in the morning and then maybe block off some time from lunch until early afternoon so that veterinarian, that practice owner, can be intimately involved with that new employee. And I'm going to talk about what that looks like. But we really do need to be prepared for them. And here's how I recommend doing it formally. I think you need to have an agenda typed up in writing for them and have a employee notebook, new employee orientation notebook for them, ready to go. So when they walk in, you're like, they walk in the door, hi, Susie, we're so glad you're here. Come on into my office. I have some things for you that we're going to go over. I have an agenda. Let's sit down and go over that together. So on the agenda, you hand it to Susie and say, okay, what I'd like to do is I'm going to take you around. I want to introduce you to everyone on the team. I'm going to give you a tour of the hospital and just get you acquainted with our work areas. And then we're going to come back in my office and we're going to go over some paperwork that we need to get accomplished for the day. So you're going to work on personnel paperwork, their employee handbook, standards handbook, their job description, and work schedules. So let's go over those. First thing, let's talk about what would go in this employee notebook. What are some of the things that we would want to have in this notebook prepared in writing for the employee the moment they walk in the door? The first thing we want to have is a welcome letter that's personalized to that employee. Then we're going to have the job description behind that. Behind that, we're going to have a face training guide with timelines and checklist. Behind that, we're going to have employee policies. Behind that, we're going to have a standards handbook. And I'll talk about the differences of those two terms. And then lastly, we'll have a blank copy of their performance evaluation form. Okay, so the welcome letter, I would personalize it. How many of you use welcome letters in your practice? Okay, a few of you do. This is good to have a welcome letter. It creates pride in the new staff member by listing your vision and your reputation in the community. Here's an example of what a letter would look like. Dear Julie, we're pleased you have joined our team at Advanced Animal Care Center. With genuine concern for our clients and their pets, we're committed to provide them with the highest veterinary care possible. We strive to use the latest technology and techniques available for our clients and patients. As a veterinary healthcare team, the staff of Advanced Animal Care Center works together to promote public education, to prevent disease, and to alleviate the suffering of animals. The principles of cooperation and openness, combined with the personal characteristics of honesty, integrity, and willingness to help each other, are the foundation of our practice. Our employees are second only to the quality of veterinary medicine that we practice. We believe that our staff members are the practice's most valued assets. We will do everything within our power to help you become an integral part of our team as quickly as we can. We always welcome any suggestions or ideas that you feel would benefit the practice. We encourage employees to share their concerns, seek information, provide input, and consult with the veterinarians at any time to discuss the work towards and work toward the resolution of any problems or issues that may arise. Welcome to the team. Sincerely, and then the doctor's name, owner's name, or practice manager's name. So you give that, and then the second thing in the notebook is the job description. Gives the job title, it lists the specific duties of this new employee, and it gives them a general overview of the position. And again, in the last session, I recommended, and someone brought it up and jogged my memory to suggest this, you need to make sure they sign a copy of that job description and put it in their personnel file. It just may protect you for legal issues in the future. Yes. Yes, in their employee handbook. Yes. She said, you suggest giving it at the interview and then giving another copy when they come. Answer to that is yes. Okay, behind the job description, I recommend having some type of phase training guide with checklists. And this is not something that you necessarily have to create yourself. AHA has some great tools that you can purchase from them that you can use as a template. I'm a firm believer in let's not reinventing the wheel. You know, if there's tools out there that you can use, let's use them. So, you know, purchase those and bring those in and utilize those for your key positions in your practice. But you have that in there, and you may work on numbers 1 through 4, and then we're going to talk about what to do with that checklist later in the session. Okay, behind the phase training guide are your employee policies. Now, these are your policies related to personnel. So this talks about vacation time, benefits, when they're going to get it paid, how they're categorized as an employee, are they exempt, non-exempt. It talks about safety and security. It talks about rules related to the HR issues in your practice. I recommend reading this out loud to the employee because many times when I go into practices as a consultant, some of these practices have wonderful employee policies and manuals, but the employees don't know what are in the contents. They are not going, there's no accountability with them. People don't understand what's in them because they just hand them the employee policies, have them sign that they received it, and then they never talk about it again. And I think you're going to have a better compliance with what's in those policies and less confusion and miscommunication if you go through it and you highlight the key issues related to the contents of those employee policies. So you need to go through it with them and then have them sign it that they've read it, they understand it, and a copy of that signed form goes into their personnel file. How many of you have actual employee policies that's been reviewed by an attorney? Okay, about a third of you, that's good. If you don't have employee policies, I would highly recommend that you get them. I believe AHA has some available, but I would always recommend that you have a labor attorney review that, or HR return attorney in your state, review it and fine-tune it for the specific needs of your hospital and the laws in your state. You can really prevent some future liability by having that done. And then behind the employee policies, I recommend having a standards handbook. How many of you have written standards in your practice that everyone is trained to and held accountable for? Okay, some of you do. And I'm a firm believer in training your healthcare team by setting standards in your hospital. And the standards handbook would include things such as your vision and core values, your standards of service, standards of communication, standards of image, standards of conduct, and standards of care. Now, I provide a standards handbook to my clients, and I have a copy over here if any of you guys would like to take a look at it. But it's about 70 pages long. So you're not going to be able to read through that entire thing with that candidate on the first day. But you can get it started and maybe go over the vision and core values and maybe highlight some of the areas that you deem really important that you want to emphasize. Because as a key leader in your practice, you're probably the one that's going to communicate the best to this new employee about the things that you want them to understand are important in your practice. So if I'm hiring a client care specialist, for example, I'm going to spend a little bit of time in that client service area and explain to them, you're going to learn how to answer a phone and how to transfer calls and how to put a client on hold. And Susie, you're going to learn how to create a medical record and how to invoice a client and how to check a client in and how to check a client out. But what I want you to really understand, Susie, is that you need to provide exceptional client service to our clients. So I'm going to go over a few pages in the standards handbook and explain to you some of the standards that we have in place regarding serving our clients. And I'm going to talk about some of the highlights of those things. But Susie's going to go through standards training in the practice, and it's going to take a couple of months for her to get through those standards training where she's going to be tested on that. But I'm going to go through and highlight some of the key issues that I think are important for her to understand in her role. How many of you have a clear, defined vision in your practice that everyone is committed to and shares in? Okay, about a fourth of you. I think it's really important that this new employee understands what your vision is. And if you don't have a vision that's clearly defined and your team shares in, then I recommend you need to have a strategic planning session and do that. If your practice grosses over $1 million a year, and you're not doing some sort of strategic planning every 12 months, you're leading to catastrophe. And you need to be doing some type of strategic planning where your team is involved in the process of what is the future state of your practice. What are you doing to improve your practice and change your practice so that you are staying competitive and progressive in our industry? And I think many times we have low motivation in team members because they're not involved in the process of where are we going as a team and as a hospital. So if you're not doing that, I highly recommend doing that. I'm going to talk more about that tomorrow in the client focus track. But for the sake of new employees, when they come in, you need to explain to them what your vision is. And this is just a practice model that I talk a lot about with my clients, and it's the client-patient-centered practice where we really focus on the wheel is the practice, and the client and the patient is the hub of our wheel. Everything we do in our hospital focuses on how we can better serve our clients and our patients. So our veterinarian is a spoke in the wheel, and our healthcare team is an equal spoke. And we are all, ladies and gentlemen, serving our clients in its highest form. The way we set standards in our practice, where it funnels up to how we can better serve our clients and our patients. We train our healthcare team around our standards and serving our clients and patients, and everyone on our team is trained to educate clients so that we can better serve our clients and patients. I think it's really important in those first couple of days that you train those team members the basics of wellness. I mean, how many of you work in general practices? Okay, the majority of you. Others are like emergency, critical care specialists. Raise your hand if it's those things. Okay. So the rest of you are pretty much general practice. So, I mean, on average, when I ask people how many of the pets that come into your hospital are for these things, wellness exam, vaccinations, heartworm testing, fecal testing, feline leukemia, FIV testing, spay, neuter, declaw, dentistry, common maladies such as eye infections, ear infections, skin problems, lameness, vomiting, and diarrhea. On a scale of 0 to 100%, how many animals that come into your practice are those things? Typically, they tell me 85 to 90%. Would everyone agree with that? So we need to spend some time with that new employee, getting them well-versed in that 80 to 90%. They need to understand our wellness standards as initial foundation for being able. I mean, I'm not going to put a client care specialist at the front desk until they understand these things. Why do we do physical exams? How often do we do a physical exam? Why is a physical exam even important for a dog or a cat? For wellness, for example. What are our vaccine protocols? Why do we vaccinate, and what are they? What type of preventatives do we give dogs and cats, and what's our standard recommendation for preventative? What routine diagnostics do we do in our practice, and why do we do them? What elective surgeries do we do? I talk to them about pre-anesthetic blood work and pain medication, and what takes place, some of the protocols related to those things. Dental care, grooming and behavior and nutrition. How many of you do that with new employees in the first week they start? A couple do. And I think it's really important that you get them to understand some of the medicine that we do in practice. I mean, I don't think it matters what position they're in. They need to understand those things. And they need to have a comprehensive understanding. They're going to learn more and more as they get into the practice, and they'll learn from other team members and then in your training meetings that you do. But I think it's important before you put an employee in their job position, they need to have that basic knowledge. Yes? Well, everything I'm talking about right now, this is like in the first 2 days. So we're going, the first day we're going over personnel paperwork, we're reading through those employee policies and the job description, and we're going through, you know, maybe 10 pages in the standards handbook that's going to list some of these standards that we have in our hospital. And I'm going to the wellness standards, yeah, I think it's an overview, but probably a couple of hours. Just a couple of hours of going over that so that they're understanding. I mean, somebody perhaps who's never been in the veterinary profession does not know what the word fecal means. Okay, so we have to explain to them what that is. Or what, you know, why would we do a heartworm test? How do dogs and cats get heartworms? How are they transmitted? So just explaining to them some basic information so that they have that baseline knowledge, so that when they do get in front of a client, they're not feeling, I think a lot of employees get put in positions where they feel extremely stupid because we do not take the time to inform them about the knowledge that they need to have in their job. And if you're in a practice where you're leveraging the healthcare team, which I believe you should be leveraging them, they're educating clients and they're interfacing with clients and they need to have that background knowledge. They may not remember everything you told them in that 2 hour period, because you're going to be doing some ongoing training with them and some tests. I'm a firm believer in testing. But giving them that baseline knowledge as an orientation process is important. Yes?
Do you do this orientation with
everybody? I think everybody should have this. And I think a great training tool is client communication tools. You know, tools that you give clients when you're... when they're coming in for their wellness visit, for example. Like, I have a tool that I use. It's called Love and Protection Guidelines. How many of you have wellness client communication tools that you give your clients when they come in for their wellness visit? Okay, about a fourth of you. This is a great dual-purpose tool because you can have this tool. So you have a client that comes in for their wellness visit. And the client care specialist says, Mrs. Jones, why don't you have a seat in our reception area? And just as soon as we have a room for you, we'll get you in a room. Here are our love and protection guidelines. This just gives you a list of the things that we recommend based on the age of your pet. Why don't you take a look at that? And when you get into the exam room, our technical team will go over that in more detail with you. And so it explains what we recommend for the pet, and this it also explains why we recommend it. And you could create this like in a brochure format. But here, this becomes a training tool for your staff. And it goes into detail. So instead of, you know, you could hand this to your new employee on that first day and say, you know, we're going to go through this together. Why are they important? A 12-body system comprehensive exam. Your pet ages 6 to 7 years for every human year. A thorough exam last year would therefore be equivalent to 6 to 7 years ago. We need to do a complete and thorough exam nose to tail each year. The doctor checks the eyes, ears, mouth, teeth, lymphatic system, heart, lungs, musculoskeletal system, abdomen, internal organs, skin, hair coat, and many other things along the way. Your pet cannot tell us how they feel or where it hurts. Veterinarians are specially trained to examine and interpret the findings in order to make recommendations for your pet's continued health. And so it just goes through details, and it gives them an understanding of why we do the things we do in our practice. And I think this is a, you know, like I said, a dual purpose, and it just goes into detail about your vaccinations, what vaccines you give, and becomes your standard in your hospital. And now everyone is in the loop about why these are your standards and why you recommend them. How many of you have this in your practice? About a handful of you. That's good. I think it's important to have that. He said, what about retention and overwhelming these employees in the first couple of days? Yeah, I mean, you've got to be careful of that, that you're not giving them too much information. I think the key is that you want to get them in the position as quickly as you can, but you also want to make sure that they have some baseline knowledge. And so this is just introducing them to the terminology and the jargon that we use in veterinary practice. You're going to go back and revisit it. Obviously, because they aren't going to be able to retain all of the information. But think about the fact, if you didn't do any of this, are they going to deem that information important later on? I don't know. I think it's important if you take the time in the first couple of days to give them all this information, all of a sudden their performance level and expectation have gone way up. They're thinking, wow. I have to learn a lot of stuff. And yeah, they may feel overwhelmed, but hopefully that will challenge them to perform at a higher level if maybe you didn't explain all these things to them. So it's really getting them to see the importance of their position, and now they see that they're an integral part of the delivery of healthcare in the practice. I'm not just a bean counter in this hospital. I'm important. And I have a lot that I'm going to have to contribute once I get the knowledge that I need to do what I need to do in the hospital. So after you feel confident that you've laid a firm foundation for them, and they feel you've given them enough time and attention that they've got a baseline knowledge of medical services that your practice provides, you've gone over the personnel information, now you want to pass them off to someone else in the hospital. And I think we really mess up in this one a little bit. Because sometimes we'll just pass them off to the person that's in that area, and we don't talk to that person. Let's say Susie's the new employee and Julie is the other client care specialist that's in that role right now. We just don't even talk to Julie about it. We just put Susie in there and say, now, Susie, you just watch Julie, and Julie's going to show you around. She's going to show you the ropes and show you how to do everything. And Julie's over here going, wait a minute. I didn't sign up for this. I didn't sign up to be a trainer. I'm barely making it over here doing my job by myself. I've had no help. I'm stressed out. You know, I've been waiting 2 months for you to fill this position, and now you want me to do my job and help her do her job. Uh-uh. I'm not doing that. And Julie's going to get very resentful. So what has to happen is, I believe, is that you've got to sit Julie down or identify, you've got more than one person in that area, you need to identify who are the people that are going to be good trainers. Because not everybody, just because they're really good in that position doesn't mean they're going to be a good trainer. You've got to identify, are they willing to train? Because if they're not willing to train, then they might sabotage the success of that new employee. They might sabotage the training. They may not want to talk to that new employee. They may be angry and resentful, and so they take it out on that new employee, and all of a sudden you've done all this work, you've spent all this time with this new person, and then you pass them off to, you know, a resentful coworker, and that new employee quits a week later because they felt ostracized. So you need to be real careful about how you go about getting passing this employee off to somebody. And I can tell you from experience, I've made many, many mistakes. I hired a licensed veterinary technician. I started her on a Friday. It was a crazy day. I spent a little bit of time with her in my office, and then I passed her off to my head technician, and it was just not the right day for her to start. And at the end of the day, she came to me and said, I can't do this. You guys are too busy. This is just too high stress for me, and I'm leaving. And I was like, wait, no, wait, give me another chance, please. But it was too late. It was my fault. I screwed up. I should have started her on a slower day, and I should have spent a little more time preparing my technical team for her, and I didn't do that. She said, what if you don't have slow days? Good point. If she said, every day is crazy, then maybe you need to be a little more cautious of when you pass that person off. Maybe you need to be back there too when you pass them off. If you don't trust what's going to go on back there, then maybe you need to be back there with them and hold their hand a little bit longer until you feel secure that they're going to be handled properly with your team members. So, but I'm a firm believer, you know, bring one of your key people in, sit them down and say, we need a trainer. We need somebody who can train, and we want to compensate you for that. We want to compensate you for being a mentor of these new employees. And reward their efforts. I have a couple of practices that do like a reward buddy system. So the mentor, if the mentor gets the new employee integrated into the practice, they take all their tests and they receive a certain score or higher. In a 12-month period, the employee's still there. They've taken all their tests. They're doing well. Their performance reviews are above average. That mentor gets a $500 bonus in addition to their hourly rate for being a trainer. So they get a $500 bonus at the end of 12 months. So there's an incentive to get this employee working hard, thriving in their role and their position. Do you guys have any employees that run off new employees? Because they're territorial and they start feeling insecure about that new employee, that they're going to be in the limelight or they're going to overshine them or whatever. And so I think this is a great plan to put in place when you've got some of those employees that are not welcoming to newcomers. She asked, should the mentor be one of the leads in that department or someone that's actually in that role? I think that's completely up to you and how your practice is structured. I think it needs to be someone that you trust thoroughly, that's going to do the proper training, and you need to follow up and make sure that they're doing what needs to be done. I think that's my next slide. You need to follow up weekly with that employee. So once you pass them off to that trainer or that mentor or the lead person in that department, you need to bring that person into your office. You need to sit them down and say, Susie, how's it going? How are you doing in your position? How's Julie training you? Are you getting the information that you need? Do you feel like, you know, go through the phase training checklist and say, Lynn, let me take a look at it and let's see where you've gotten so far. And get some feedback from them, because you might be able to circumvent a problem that could really blow up if you did not ask those questions. And I've had that happen where I've brought someone in and on the outside everything looked great. They were working together, everything seemed fine, and then I brought that person in confidentially and shut the door, and she just, you know, said, They are totally ignoring me up here. I feel so isolated. They're not showing me anything. They're not communicating with me. I don't know if I've never worked in this type of environment before. I don't know if I can do this. You know, and as a manager, I'm like, whoa, I had no idea. On the outside, it looked like everything was fine. And so I was able to, you know, prevent that person from leaving. How much does it cost every time you turn over a client care specialist? Do you guys know the number? It's like $27,000, according to Tumblin and Wichita and Associates, who's another, some colleagues of mine who work in this profession, consultant speak. They've done some surveys and some statistics. So it's very, very costly every time we turn over an employee. And so we want to get that new person integrated into our culture and our team as quickly as possible. And it takes that you need to handle them with kid gloves. Yes. She said they do mentor lunches too in the first 90 days. Twice in the first 90. Is it the whole team or just one? Is it one on one or is about four or five people together all go to lunch? So in the first 3 to 4 weeks, they match them up with somebody else in the hospital and take them to lunch. And so it's a little more relaxed environment and gives them an opportunity to bond with someone else in the hospital. I think that's an excellent idea. Did someone else have a question? Yes. I think that's an excellent. She said the four owners take that new employee out to lunch. Wow, that's awesome. Right, if not the four big honchos ganging up on the little new employee. I think that's excellent. I was consulting a practice in the southeast, and these doctors, it was eight partners, and two or three of them said, yeah, we don't even get to know new employees' names until after they've been with us for 90 days. And I thought to myself, you know, you're firing them and you don't even realize it. Because they're like, you know, we don't even get to know them, because if they can't make it in our environment, you know, within 90 days, then we're not going to waste our time getting to know them. And I'm thinking to myself, you got it so backwards. So backwards. They're firing them and they don't even realize they're doing it. So, the owner's taking those new employees out to lunch that first week. Wow, what a message. What kind of message are you sending? You're important to me. I want to know you as an employee. I want to get to know you, and you are an integral part of this team. So that's excellent. What was your question?
My question was
Her question was, if you do like the mentor buddy system where you reward them if they stay after 12 months and they pass their test. But what if you've got that employee who, for whatever reason, stays only 8 or 9 months, and that trainer's done all this hard work, and at the end of that period, you know, they don't get that bonus? Well, number one, I don't think that should be their only form of compensation. I think they should get a hourly rate increase for being a trainer. So in addition to being, for example, a veterinary assistant, they're also, you know, let's say they make, you know, $12 an hour for being a veterinary assistant, or $10 an hour. They're going to get another dollar or two to be a trainer. And then they get that $500 bonus at the end of that 12 months if that person has done exceptional. That's just, you know, kind of icing on the cake. So there's even a bigger incentive to get that new employee integrated, trained, thriving, and successful in their position. Always, because they're always in trainer mode. I mean, I would have roles and responsibilities for them even when there's not new employees coming on board. I would give them some additional responsibilities. So in that interim, when they're not training, they're doing some other type of training of some sort or implementing new systems. Yes. Other questions? Yes. Yeah, you know, I think that's a hard, I mean, I don't know the statistic. I mean, I think that we do need to get some statistics out there. I think based on some of the information that I've read and journals and things like that, people are moving jobs frequently. They're moving up, you know, especially in corporate America, and they're, you know, they want to move up that ladder. I think that it's difficult for us to have an expectation as far as how long they're going to stay with us. I think what I was trying to communicate in my last session is I don't want to know that on the very front end that they're going to leave in 2 years. I don't want to know that for certain because they're going to go and I don't want to bring someone in and interview them and I know in 2 years they're going to go do something else because they tell me that in the interview. Well, I'm studying to be a RN or I'm studying to be a CPA or I'm going to law school. I just don't know if I want to do that. If I want to waste my time training this person and know that in a year and a half or 2 years they're moving on. I want to hire somebody that I know is going to be in that practice long term, and then I'm going to do everything I possibly can to keep them part of our team. You know, challenging them, growing them, keeping them in the loop of what's going on, appreciating them, recognizing them for the work they do, giving them leadership roles and responsibilities so that they see this position as a career and not just as a job. Now, they may leave in 3 years because they go out and they find something that they just absolutely love and maybe they're making double the money. I can't compete with that. But I want to try and do it right in the beginning so I don't have the turnover issue happening. Okay, the last thing in the notebook I recommend when on that first day of employment, you give them a blank copy of their performance evaluation. And you just say, Susie, we're going to do evaluation in 30 days, and this is what you're going to be evaluated on. And so at the end of the 30 days, I want you to fill out this performance evaluation and evaluate yourself. And then I want you to bring it to me, and I'm going to fill one out, and then you and I are going to sit down, and we're going to compare notes. And so what that does for Susie is she already knows what the expectation is going to be. She's going to read through that blank performance evaluation form, and she's going to see that, you know, we're going to look at her professionalism. We're going to look at how reliable she is. We're going to look at her customer service skills. We're going to look at her accuracy and thoroughness in her work, her image. So she's already starting to say, okay, this job is important because I'm going to get evaluated in 30 days. And there's an expectation of these are the things I need to perform, or otherwise I'm not going to get a good score. And I could potentially not stay in this position. So it sets a level of expectation when you put that in their notebook on that first day and you go over it with them that they're gonna need to fill that out and evaluate themselves. How many of you do it that way, just in general, when you evaluate employees, have them evaluate themselves? The majority of you. And that's a great way to do it because typically people score themselves lower than they really are. So it softens the blow when you sit them down and you go over the scores. You typically score them a little bit higher. But then you're able to say to them, well, it looks like we both agree here that you need to work on how cheerful you are when you answer the phone. We both scored about the same in that area. Yes? She asked, what do I think about peer evaluations? I'm a firm believer in peer evaluations. I think they're excellent. You know, there's just a right way to do it and wrong way to do it. I'm going to talk a little bit about that later in the day. But I do believe in peer evaluations. You had a question earlier. Would you have the trainer? Absolutely. You know, if you're a practice manager and you're, you know, in another area of the hospital and you're not intimately involved in that employee, how could you evaluate that person? I mean, whenever you're doing any sort of performance appraisals, you need to have the person who's overseeing that person fill it out. You may have some, feedback that you want to include in the evaluation, but I think it should be the person who's more intimately involved in that person's performance. That's why peer evaluations work so well, because you're getting a very comprehensive input from the people who are working with that employee. Anyone else have a question? Yes, and you had one more? Absolutely. What she said was is that she does not have turnover, a lot of turnover in her practice. She has longevity in her employees. And she said one of the reasons for that is because she really takes the time recruiting. And her boss can't stand it because he wants her to hire someone immediately. But she really takes the time getting the right person initially. And then once she hires them, she really spends time talking to them about how much they're going to invest in them as an employee with their benefits and things like that. And then they have a veterinarian who's really taken a real initiative into continuing education. And they have an employee that's taking a Spanish class, which they're paying for. And then when she finishes that Spanish class, they're going to give her a $500 bonus. They have another employee that's in dentistry and anesthesia. And so they see the importance of investing. Employees see that they're investing in them, and so it creates a sense of loyalty to the practice. And I totally agree with that. That's excellent. Excellent. Okay, I'm done with my slides, so how are we on time? We've got about 5 minutes. So, yes. So I guess like there's a couple of things I would consider. Number one, did I hire the right person? Is this person, did they really have the skill set to do the job? Are they the caliber of person that I need to be able to do this job, that has the knowledge and the intellect and the emotional intelligence to do this position? And then the second thing is, I might survey my healthcare team and finding out how we might change the way we do the training program. You know, I agree that, I mean, I think you can be too intensive. I think a lot of people learn on-the-job training, and so you have to have a good mix of on-the-job where they, because people learn by doing. So if you do too much curriculum and book work, people are going to be overwhelmed by that. I personally do better on the job than, you know, having to read a textbook. I'm going to struggle if that's what I'm doing for 6 months before I can actually get in and even do the work. So if I have a good mix of some curriculum that I read and I get tested on, but I actually get to get in there and work and ask questions and get involved, and I get empowered early on where I'm maybe even taking some risk and learning and stretching me, then I might be more challenged to stay in the game and get excited about that. So maybe it's that potentially, and I don't know because I'm not in your practice, but just based on what you explained, that, you know, it may be 6 months to a year before they actually get in and do the work. Maybe you need to get them in more and do a little more.
They're in the mix.
They're in the mix. Okay, good. Yeah. So I might survey your staff, survey some of your new employees, and say, what could we have done differently and how could we improve it? And get some feedback from them. They'll tell you everything you want to know and then some. Yes?
As far as training,
she asked, is it too detailed to have a written explanation of, you know, how to do a fecal test? What was the other one? Oh, videotape.
Tape it.
No, I think you could never have enough systematized processes in place that people can learn from. I think that the more you have things systematized, the better there's going to be a consistency in what's being done in your practice. Versus, well, this is how Susie does it, and this is how Joe does it, and this is how Julie does it. If you have some standard ways of doing everything in your hospital, when new employees come in, they say, this is how we do it in our hospital. Let me show you, this is how we do it. And there's a consistency. And
that
falls in my term of standards, yes, and protocols. And there's consistency. There's clarity. When you have clarity with your team, it becomes meaningful to your team when they understand, and there's an answer for everything in our hospital. It's not, well, this is how Dr. Smith does it, and this is how Dr. Jones does it, and this is how Dr. Turner does it. This is how we as a hospital do it in our practice. There's some real meaning to that for your team. I don't believe there is a statistic for that. But you're right. I mean, I said in the very beginning of this morning when I started at 8:30, I wish I could give you some magic potion and it would just poof all work every single time. It's not going to. I mean, one of the reasons why I left the personnel industry and came into the veterinary industry is because my product was people. And I would work extremely hard to get this client to hire our firm to help them recruit employees. And then once we got the client, they were sold, and then I would, you know, get the employee in there. Or actually, the employee would call me Sunday night and say, I'm not going Monday morning. I've changed my mind. And so it's just people. We're dealing with people. And people are not perfect. And so there's always going to be failures. You know, you may bring someone in, you may do everything that I've talked about up here and then some, and it's still not work out. And that's just the reality of it. That's the frustrating part of human resources. But that's just the way it is. But hopefully you can put some processes and steps in place where you can prevent high levels of turnover because you didn't do some of the things that you could have done to prevent that. And that's what I'm hoping you guys are going to have as takeaways today. Any other questions? Yes. She asked, they have a lot of turnover with their evening staff because they're a 24-hour hospital and they hire med students. Are these veterinary medical students or human medical? Veterinary medical. Okay. They're vet students. And they're being what, technicians and... I think I would my focus would be to have a core group of stable employees on that evening shift, and then fill in the rest with those veterinary students. But I would not have my core people, vet students, turning over every year or two. I think that would just create a lot of chaos and inconsistency in your workflow and your systems and standards in your hospital. Thank you all so much, and we'll come back and start talking about training.